how's it going there? How's the podcast going? It sounds great, and you're powering out lots of content.
Yeah, I've got to admit, it's been hard. It's been hard because I've got a full-time job. I'm doing 45 hours a week in the office. I'm doing about 15 to 20 hours on the road a week to get to work and back. So it's been challenging. You know, there's been times where, because you have to write the script for the show, you have to prepare, you have to do the research on the person that you're interviewing. Otherwise, you're just going to sit there and babble. So,
yeah.
And you want to create a good show for your audience, you know. But it's been good. How about you? How many have you done? You've done three or four, have you?
I mean, I've got a whole of series one recorded, but you know what? I recorded them 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've been so busy, I didn't release them. So actually, I'm finally getting organised and releasing them back. You know, like pretending they're recent, but the content's not dated. It's still relevant. Yeah. And then series two, I've got a few bigger profile guests lined up and things. So, but it's hard, isn't it? You know, it's hard to build up a big audience. And
yes, yeah, it's really weird because, like, I was trying to get hold of a bigger guest, you know, like someone like, I don't know, you know, Alan Sugar or someone like that. And they just seem to be that they go on TV and they say they want to help all these people. And then, when you're asking them to come on and speak to my audience, yeah, I haven't got a large following, but you would probably help that. So you're helping me and you're reaching more of an audience. I don't get the whole why they don't come on my show. It's a strange one. I can't get my head around it.
I think that the thing is that these people, you know, they're looking for a certain audience size. And if they don't see it, then they don't tend to respond. But I think you can be clever about it. I think you can have an intermediary step. And I think the thing to do is look for someone who's high profile, but not maybe in the spotlight at the moment. So someone who's written a book maybe a few years ago, and then get a bigger name on, but someone who maybe would be willing to come on. And then once you can show that, then you can say, well, I've had so-and-so on my podcast, and I think it'll make it much easier.
Yeah. But listen, mate, thanks for coming on. Appreciate pleasure. You coming on. I know that you're doing a lot of great things out there for people. But I just wanted to speak to you about, you remember, first of all, tell my audience what you do. I know you're a torchbearer and you do a lot of high intensity training, but with a technical aspect to it. And I know that you've got a certain base, you've got a training from America. So remember, we spoke last time about that. If you just tell us a basic what you do.
Of course. So first of all, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, Dervish. That's the $1 million or £1 million question. What do I do? I've been trying to work it out my whole life, and I think I still am. And I'm 44, and I'm kind of, I think I'm not getting any clearer. But I think that's a good thing, actually. I've realised that that's the secret. I have a background as a Czech practitioner, so corrective high performance exercise kinesiology.
That was
it's like founded by a guy called Paul Czech, who's got a brilliant podcast, Living 4D with Paul Czech. Mm-hmm. And really, it's like it's the sort of the high end of personal training and fitness. It's sort of specializing in corrective exercise, a very holistic approach, nutrition, lifestyle coaching, which is a huge passion of mine, or was, still is, but was a big focus. So I've that's my background. Before that, I actually started a clothing company in my early 20s. Like when I was at school, I'd always like played around drawing, you know, sketching out logos, and I was a little bit obsessed with kind of graphic design and branding, I guess. And so I wanted to own my own kind of record label, actually, because they always had cool logos.
Yeah.
Anyway, it ended up being clothing. So in my early 20s, I started a clothing company, a snowboarding clothing company. Yeah. And I was printing my own t-shirts and selling them at Portobello Market. Mm-hmm. And that turned into like apparel, like technical apparel. And I ran that for 7 years and built it up to a successful business. Then the fitness stuff came. And I've been a coach and a trainer for almost 20 years. But I actually stepped away from that. I kind of retired from coaching, from training people about really about 2 years, 18 months, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've started another business, which is communications, kind of story-based communications. So we're an agency based in Milan and London. And yeah, so that's kind of it. So a bit of everything.
Okay. So your quote about making, if you don't make it by your 40s, then you've missed the window. Come on, let's diverge a bit. Let's dive into that a little bit more, because I remember thinking to myself, if I haven't made it, and making it in my mind might not be the same as what you've got in your mind. Making it in my mind is, I don't know, having a Porsche 911 in the garage, and a nice four-bedroom house, two children, and two holidays a year. I'm quite happy with doing that. And good health, obviously, is another big aspect, first aspect, I suppose. But so what's making it for you, and then why do you think it you have to make it into your 40s?
That's a lovely intro into that question, Dervish. I think that, you know, everyone has their own definition of success. And this has been a big theme of my coaching work, certainly, is the fact that, you know, I see so many people kind of burnt out, you know, men who are like mid-40s, 50s, mid-50s, and they've chased a certain kind of lifestyle which we've been sold, which is the material possessions and the trappings and, you know, no offense to your audience, the cars, you know, the money, the yachts, the kind of the Instagram lifestyle, let's say, of the, you know, very material stuff. And I think that, you know, it doesn't necessarily make people happy. If that's what floats your boat, then absolutely fantastic, you know, more power to you. But for a lot of people, it's not really what they're after. And I've heard this firsthand from some very, very wealthy people as well, who've described, you know, it's just like climbing the next mountain, you know, you get the thing or you achieve the target, but it doesn't actually scratch the itch. And so you have to keep on going. So I think that, first of all, everyone has their own personal definition of success, and whatever that may be, whether it's to be the most amazing stay-at-home mum and raise, you know, a couple of kids. That's what my wife does. She left a career in law to be a full-time mum, and it's a super hard job, and, you know, like way harder than everything I do. Or whether you want to have a massive business and, you know, kind of change the world. It doesn't really matter, but it's a very individual thing. So first of all, you know, the thing about the 40s, you know, I had a conversation with my mum a couple of weeks ago, bless her, and she, you know, she has a, I guess, a slightly old school attitude to things in some ways, just from her upbringing. And it was like, the conversation was that, you know, how's business going? And I said, yeah, it's going really, really well. And she's like, yeah, that's great, because as a man, really, you know, you need to make it in your 40s, otherwise you kind of miss the boat. So it got me really thinking about this, you know, why do people think that? But really the sort of main thinking behind it for me is about health. It's about health and fitness. I worked as a coach with a lot of men who, you know, kind of successful, and as I say, were in their mid-40s. And it's a real shame when you're that age, you have a lot of experience, you have a lot of life experience, a lot of knowledge, you're very capable, and you have a lot of kind of power, a lot of firepower, let's say, at your disposal to do big things, you know, build businesses, help people, make an impact in the world in whatever you want to do. But a lot of people have declining health. They've like sacrificed their health because they've chased the kind of traditional dreams of success, model of success. And they find that they're knackered, basically, and their health is not as good as it could be. And so for me, that's a real, real shame. It's like, you should be really healthy. You should be in your prime in some ways, in your mid-40s, because you can be a little bit smarter about things. And so if you can add up the health and the fitness, which shouldn't be declining, and if you can add that together with the kind of knowledge and experience, then you can really, I think, achieve a lot. So that's kind of how that conversation came about. You also asked me what my personal definition of success is. And I think this is a really, really interesting one. I've tried to think about a lot. You know, I kind of, like everyone, I want to make a good amount of money so I can look after my family. But apart from that, you know what? It's just being really healthy and freedom. Like for me, is the biggest thing is freedom, is just to have freedom of time, freedom of location, freedom to move my body in the way that I choose, and kind of freedom of mindset. So I can basically just, like, there's a guy called Osho, this renegade Indian philosopher who who basically said that you should never, you know, become involved in any belief system. And I really believe in that because it sort of closes doors and it takes away your freedom of mind. So that's kind of my, that's what I think.
Okay. It's interesting because, you know, when I try and take little bits of people's philosophy and people's training methods and try and incorporate into my life. And I was thinking of doing some cold therapy, very similar to what, what's that Dutch guy's name that does it?
Wim Hof. Yeah.
And my ex-yoga teacher's just done a course with him, online course, I think it is, on cold therapy and how it benefits you. But I guess, how does cold therapy benefit us? Because I know that if I go and have a cold shower every evening, for example, that's the easiest way of doing it at the moment for me, because I haven't got an ice bath or an ice bucket. But I know I would catch a cold, definitely. Just it's just my genetic makeup. Even though I was born in the UK, I should be used to this colder weather. But I never can get used to the cold, and I think it's something to do with my genetics. So how would you say that the cold therapy helps individuals, and what type of cold therapy have you used in the past?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking good, by the way. You're looking well. So the cold stuff is really, really interesting. Obviously, it's a massive trend now, you know, like pretty much everybody and their dog are kind of doing wild swimming, cold swimming. Not everyone's jumping into an ice bath, which I would recommend. It's a really good experience, but I would recommend building up to it slowly, which I'll cover in a minute. And also kind of learning from someone who can help you stay safe and just kind of follow a few basic rules. But there are lots of benefits. I mean, you can start with fat burning. So there is some research into this. It's not like the most comprehensive research, but so obviously, you know, you'll get a boost to your metabolism by getting cold because your body has to reheat itself on a very basic level. There's a little bit of research into the fact that the cold activates brown fat reserves. Mm-hmm. So as a baby, when you're born, you have a lot of brown fat kind of, which is different to white fat tissue in the body. It kind of, rather than storing fat, I can't remember the exact science behind this, but it kind of promotes fat burning, basically the brown fat reserves. And as you grow up, you lose the brown fat reserves, apart from kind of like in between the shoulders, you know, like sort of base of the neck, I think is an area that you retain them. So obviously, apparently the thinking is that if you use cold exposure, cold water, ice baths, you can increase your reserves of brown fat. You can promote fat burning. So that's one thing. I'm not that fussed about that. Immune system, I think, is the more important kind of angle. I think that, you know, you can boost your immune system. It's really good for blood flow. So obviously, your blood, when you get cold, when you get in an ice bath or a really cold pool, your blood rushes to the core to protect the internal organs, so that you stay safe, basically, so you can stay alive. And then obviously, as you get out and as you start to warm up, the blood kind of comes back to the surface. So I think it's really good for the kind of capillaries and the blood vessels and the network. Obviously, there's a breath work angle as well. You have to control your breathing because you get that kind of that gasping, that fear, that shock reflex.
That's what happened to me last night.
So obviously that's where Wim Hof comes in. You know, so he obviously has a whole kind of philosophy around this and breathing techniques. And so I did a kind of 2-hour workshop with a Wim Hof instructor, and she came down to my house, and we did the breathing first, which was amazing. And then we did a 2-minute ice bath, and it was like it's on Instagram. It's on my Instagram. I had an old tin bath, old steel bath in the garden, stuck a plug in it, filled it up with cold water. And then I put 40 kilograms of ice in it. So I had to get in, and, you know, I had to do a 2-minute ice bath. Now, 2 minutes is really important because I think 2 minutes or under, you're okay with hypothermia. Going over 2 minutes, you have to be really careful because your body core temperature can drop more than you would like, and you can, you know, risk hypothermia, which is obviously really not a good idea. But it was an exhilarating experience. It's probably I felt so chilled afterwards. Like, it's probably the best night's sleep I've had as an adult ever.
Mate, I've got problems with sleep, man. I've got issues with sleeping. I've actually looked at all the... To be honest, you're probably going to get a gun out and shoot me now, but sometimes I've had it up to here with not being able to sleep. So what I do is, you know the cough medicine, the sleepy one? I'll have a drop of that and go to sleep.
Yeah.
Now, my problem is not getting to sleep, it's staying asleep, right? So thank you for saying that I look good, I look well. You look amazing, by the way, yourself. You always do.
Thank you.
I don't feel great. And there's a couple of things that are annoying me at the moment, which we don't have to discuss on this podcast, but bloating is one, and I know that's down to diet. But that's a mental struggle for me and nothing else. And I realize that. Because I still train really hard in the gym. And I said to the reception staff at the gym the other day, I said to her, am I being a pussy? Or am I just working harder than everyone else in that room? Because I come out, my eyes are stinging from the sweat going into them. I'm dripping with sweat. I can't really walk straight. Like I really push myself when I go. And it's only for sometimes 10 minutes or 20 minutes or even 30 minutes. I never stay in the gym more than that, really. But I always sit down on the sofa that evening and my legs feel like they're going to snap off. They feel so tight. My hips are so tight all the time. So I'm constantly looking at ways to improve myself in that aspect. But it's all down to here. It's all down to the mind, which we spoke about last time. I think we touched on this in the last podcast, which I haven't released, but I will. It'll only be on audio because that was probably, I think that was the very first podcast I ever did. I think.
Oh wow! I'm honoured to have been the first guest.
And you came. I remember you came to my house, which was really, really nice of you to do that. And that's the only face-to-face podcast I've done.
Oh, they're more fun face-to-face.
They are.
Zoom is nice, but it's like being in a room with someone. The energy is different, and it's really, really nice. There's a lot in what you just said, by the way. I don't know if you want me to answer any of the stuff you want to.
Don't feel like you have to, but yeah, if you can, for my audience,
I'd love to if you feel it's valuable. So yeah. Like this, let's start with, like, there are these things called foundational health principles, which is the foundation, funnily enough, of all of my health work. And these come from Paul Check. So obviously I'm a Check practitioner and it comes from the work I studied, you know, under him. He talks about foundational health principles. Mm-hmm. And that obviously there are six of them. I always get them wrong, but there's breathing, mm-hmm. there's sleep, mm-hmm. there's movement, exercise, there's nutrition, there's happiness. And there is, I always forget number six, but basically a kind of, it's about targets and kind of, you know, like, kind of, goals.
Yeah.
So basically if you get the foundational health principles, in particular sleep, food, movement, rest and breathing. Rest and sleep go together. They're a little bit different. If you get those ones sorted, if you own those and you're on top of them, then you'll find all of the upstream challenges like sleep, bloating, all of these different things kind of generally resolve themselves. So working on the foundational stuff, the base of the pyramid is super, super important. And it's the hardest stuff to do. You know, you're a busy, busy guy. Mm. We're all busy nowadays. And these are the things that kind of get sacrificed. Mm. With the sleep, it sounds like it's kind of middle onset insomnia. So you get off like early onset insomnia, which is like struggling to get to sleep. Mm. A lot of people get to sleep for maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours, three hours. Then they'll wake kind of in the middle of the night. And so there are a couple of things in that. One is like blood sugar handling is something that is worth looking at. So based on what you eat, based on your diet, based on your gut health and your digestion, you may be having a big blood sugar crash in the early hours of the morning, which is actually waking you up because you get this blood sugar dip, and it's a stressful kind of situation for your body. Therefore, you're kind of waking up, basically. Yeah. So one approach would be to really overhaul your nutrition, which is easy for me to say. It's hard to do in practice. And make sure that your blood sugar handling is stable. I mean, for most clients I've worked with in the past, this is the absolute place I would start with a lot of people, is that a lot of people on this blood sugar roller coaster, which is where we're busy, life is super hectic, there's not a minute to yourself. I've got my breakfast here, I've been on so many meetings this morning, I haven't finished this, I've been trying to eat bits as I go. But you know, we're on such a kind of, things are so hectic that we grab food because we're tired, we're low on energy, we're in a rush, we go for caffeine, we go for more carbohydrate-based stuff to give us a bit of a kick. And the problem with that is that you get a blood sugar spike, which is not great for your body. Your body needs to keep your blood sugar in a certain fairly narrow window. And so your body wants to clear that blood sugar down, so it releases insulin, which obviously is really effective at shuttling the blood sugar into your cells and your muscles, and your liver, etc. And then you get a blood sugar crash and you get even more tired and you get hungry again. So you kind of, people tend to reach for another coffee, some quick energy in the term of some, in the form of some carbs, even kind of like healthy carbs. And then, so we're on this roller coaster. So blood sugar handling is really, really important. It will have an effect on sleep. Caffeine, obviously, stress levels have a massive effect on sleep as well. And there are a few supplements you can look at. You know, there's a really good sleep stack that I used for a while, which has 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytryptophan, which is a precursor to serotonin and also melatonin. So basically sleep hormones and neurotransmitters, things that help you relax, get to sleep. So the sleep stack is quite a good one. I can't remember who it's like, I've totally forgotten the guy's name. I'll get you to post a link to it. Magnesium helps with sleep and relaxation. A few different supplements that you can kind of look at. But yeah, diet is a huge one for that. Bloating, again, same thing, diet. You know, your gut bacteria, the balance of your microbiome is super, super important. It's always been important, but the research over the last 10 years shows just how foundational it is for your immune system, for your brain health, for every other level of health. And so if you have an imbalance of bacteria in your gut, then, you know, it means you have digestive problems. You're not converting food to energy. You can have food intolerances. All sorts of stuff can happen.
So are there tests you can do for that? The bacteria in your gut? Can you do a test to see how much is...
Oh, okay. Certainly. There are lots of tests you can do. You can do food intolerance testing, which is kind of usually a blood finger prick or a venous blood draw. Excuse me, got a chia seed stuck to my finger, like a blood draw from the arm. And that will look at food intolerance screening. So it's like a traffic light system where they screen like 150 foods or whatever. And there are some good tests and some not so good tests. With the gut bacteria, there's a stool test, which is basically you have to take a stool sample or a couple of stool samples and put them in a vial and post them to someone. And then a good lab can, lovely. A good lab though can give you a really detailed report on your microbiome in the sense of your kind of the gut bacteria balance. Have you got an overgrowth of things like kind of candida or anything like that? You know, where are you unbalanced, imbalanced, I should say. So there are lots of things. I can recommend a few places if you
needs to. Please, if you could, and I'll post that on the show notes as well for this so that we can get some people sorted out, including myself, because I do think that I've been looking at like gut bacteria and trying to figure out that you've got these yogurty drinks in supermarkets that they say, oh, it helps your gut bacteria. I'm not convinced. Kombucha, is it kombucha? Is tea?
Kombucha, yeah.
Yeah. Any good for gut bacteria?
I mean, the health and fitness, like part of the reason I kind of left that world behind a little bit, I got really frustrated as a coach. Just because health and fitness is super overcrowded and we need to separate the two. We need to separate health and we need to separate fitness. And I'll come back to that in a minute. But it's got a bit messy and there's so much advice out there. and, you know, like so many things to try, especially with the whole biohacking world that, you know, has become big in the last 5 years. You know, like you have to spend a fortune on all these kind of pills, potions, gadgets, gimmicks. I'm not saying that stuff doesn't work, but it's back to that pyramid. It's back to the foundational health principles. Every biohacking book you read, and I've got a lot on the shelf over here to the left of me, they say there's all this cool stuff and these lasers and these light treatments you can shine in your ears and these supplements and collagen injections for the, you know, blah, 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 stem cell therapy. But that stuff, the research is kind of, the jury's out on whether that stuff works. But what we do know that works is food, sleep, exercise, breathing, and mindset. And there's loads of research into that stuff, and that works. So it's kind of like, just get the base of the pyramid right. So I'll stop banging on about that. But basically, kombucha is great, but it's fermented. Like sourdough bread, kombucha, kimchi, some of these traditional foods, they're fermented, which is good. It can be very, very healthy. However, if you have too much of it, it can actually mess up your gut bacteria a little bit. And you can kind of create histamine intolerance and a few things like that. So that's one thing. And it's the same with all of these supplements and recommendations is, you know, one, you have to individualize. So as a Czech practitioner, you get, it takes about 3 years, 3 to 5 years to become, there are four levels of the Czech system, and it's a super advanced system. And it takes a long time. It costs a lot of money. And there's a lot of study to do, and you have to earn your place, and not everyone makes it. And the point of that is that you individualize every client, because everyone's completely different. Your, you know, levels of kind of hormones in your body and neurotransmitters are different. Your shape, your size, you know, your eye color, obviously the obvious things, your genetics, everything's different. And so there's no one size fits all approach. There are commonalities, but there's nothing that works for everybody. And so one person can eat, two people can eat the same diet, and for one person, they lose weight, they feel amazing. The other person, it can make them ill. They could gain weight, they cannot feel good. So you have to individualize everything. And it can get expensive. This is the thing. Everyone wants health to be cheap and easy and, you know, like a quick fix program. Hey, I did this like 6 week transformation and I got a six pack, and, but it doesn't really work like that long term. And I think the thing is, you know, invest in yourself, invest in a good coach, invest in blood testing and lab testing if you need it, if you have some deeper seated health issues, because it will pay huge dividends, especially if you run a business or you're a busy person, busy executive, or, you know, you're a busy parent, whatever you do in life, you want to do well. Working on the foundational health stuff and getting that right will overflow positively into all other areas, and you'll perform at a much higher level. And people don't get this, but it's like a game changer.
It's weird because I was thinking about my whole diet and whole, and I've been through so many personal trainers now, and don't get me wrong, they've been good. And I'm thinking about the caveman, for example. So the caveman used to hunt his food down. So he was constantly hungry or constantly trying to run or fight to get food all the time. And I don't know how healthy they were, you know, gut biome and all that stuff. But I'm guessing they were healthier than most of us on the planet now, right? So all this stuff that Ben Greenfield, I love Ben Greenfield. I love what he does. I understand what he does. You know, EMC free zones in his house and red light therapy and all this stuff and cold therapy. He does it all.
Yeah.
But I've looked into doing all that stuff, and it costs an absolute fortune to do it.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think that, you know, the evolutionary approach, like the caveman approach, like evolutionary biology is super, super powerful. Biohacking is like, health and fitness is a really hard way to make a living. Being a personal trainer, unless you're like a celebrity personal trainer or, you know, like one of the plastic people who looks amazing on Instagram, or if you're like the secret to Instagram, by the way, little tangent, there are two secrets to Instagram. One is be a former monk, even if it was only for a couple of weeks, and you've made it, you're sorted, you've made it. Yeah. And the other one is be a hot girl who's willing to show a lot of flesh. And that is your Instagram strategy, bang there. Sorry, I'm being flippant. But,
the
biohacking movement, there's a lot of money to be made. You know, look at some of the big brands out there. these guys are making an absolute fortune because they're talking about all this stuff. It's exciting. Yeah. It's glamorous. It's like, yeah. you know, it's like, it's the magic bullet of fitness. It's what I call false hope syndrome, yeah. is that the grass is always greener. You know, I've tried loads of personal trainers. I've tried a few diets. I haven't got what I wanted. Hey, maybe there's this pill or cream or like infrared thing I can plug in. Now, infrared saunas, cold therapy, you know, standing desk like I've got here. These things are really, really good investments. And a lot of these things are valuable. But, you know, take everything with a pinch of salt. But going back to the evolutionary approach, the caveman approach, the kind of, you know, hunter-gatherer approach, you know, there's always a pendulum effect in health and fitness where we're like, yeah, paleo, you know, evolutionary, that's everyone leaps in that direction. And then it swings the other way. And it's like, no, biohacking, gadgets, that's the latest thing. The secret is to stay in the middle, tread the middle path and learn from both sides. Yeah. But you can't really go wrong. Like we've been around in some kind of humanoid form for about 2.6 million years. And modern humans have been around for like a couple of 100,000 years as we would recognize ourselves. And in that time, we've been in direct contact with the earth, outdoors, often barefoot, exposed to the elements, eating food literally directly from nature, as you say, that you could pick or pull up out of the ground, catch or kill. And, you know, we got a lot of exercise. We moved a lot. And we slept when the sun went down. We didn't have excess sugar unless you could find it. And then you would go to town and eat the whole beehive or the whole honeycomb. But it was very, very rare. And so, like, you know, that's how we're designed. And it takes, I think, this is another pool check thing. It takes like 100,000 years for the human genome to evolve. I can't remember. It's like 0.01% or something like that. Some scientists will shoot me down on that, but it takes us a long time genetically to evolve. So we are still cave people just wearing fancy clothes, looking at Macs, you know, doing podcasts, et cetera. I think the thing is that, blend the two approaches. I think this, the secret is blend, you know, have that foundation of natural health, and then have some cool gadgets as well to make it a bit more fun. If it motivates you, keep you on track.
Yeah.
Do some ice bathing. That's an evolutionary thing, actually, rather than a biohacking.
How often would you do ice bathing? Or how often would you have a cold shower, for example?
Well, I mean, I think it depends. If you're serious about wanting to use cold, kind of cold exposure, cold thermogenesis, you know, first of all, think about your motivations. Are you doing it because everyone else is and some guy in a book said, hey, this is cool? Or are you doing it because you really want to invest in your health?
Yes.
In which case, just build up gradually. Start super slowly. Turn the shower cold. Like, have a normal shower. Turn the shower cold for 30 seconds. And at first, if you
hate... Fully cold?
Oh, yeah, fully cold, yeah.
I thought you were going to say start it at a certain degree and then turn it up and...
No, because you want the contrast. You want the contrast. However, start slow again. So have your normal shower, turn it cold, but maybe just stick your face under for 30 seconds. Don't suddenly leap under. Don't get your chest under because you can get a shock reflex.
It depends
how healthy you are. You know, if people have heart problems, it can actually be quite a serious issue. If you leap into cold water, you have an underlying heart condition. It's a shock to the system. So you need to be really careful. You need to tiptoe into it. But if you are healthy, turn it cold. Stick your face under, stick your hands under, then, you know, the next day, stick your sort of, you know, arm under and your face. Just gradually, progressively move into it. And then eventually what you want to be doing is having your shower, maybe daily if you can, and you have the last 30 seconds, 60 seconds, 2 minutes, you turn it fully cold, take a couple of deep breaths, you control your breathing so you're not gasping, you don't do that, you do that, you just basically keep your breathing smooth and even, and make sure you exhale, and then just step under, and then just like, I turn around and I let it go on my head all the way down back of my neck. I cover my shoulders, let it go on, you know, try and cover everything. I don't do it that often, actually, in the shower. I much prefer going in like a cold pool or you know, an ice bath. But I mean, I think just build up gradually. Start with once, twice a week, you know, then build up to turning the shower cold, getting a bit more of your body under 3 times a week, then every day if you can. And then once you're there and you know you're reacting okay, you can tolerate maybe a couple of minutes of a full cold shower, then think about going into, you know, an ice bath or a cold pool or something like that. And I would say, you know, do some research or hire someone to help you. I did a workshop with Emma Estrella Corey, who's a Wim Hof instructor. Yeah. It wasn't really expensive. I did a private one because, you know, I just wanted to do it on my own time. But she does group workshops. There are loads of Wim Hof coaches around. Go to one of their workshops, kind of learn from one of the experts and you'll be safe. You'll learn the breathing techniques and then you'll love it. You'll feel really, really good.
Yeah. And do the breathing techniques work? Do they work? Because I've seen him do it. And it looks amazing.
The breathing's awesome. Like I played around with it on my own. And you know, this is the thing. You can look at YouTube, you can watch some of Wim Hof's videos, you can play around, but you don't get the sort of important points. So that's why I hired Emma to come down and do a workshop for me. And so we did about an hour and a half of breathing actually before we did the ice. And the breathing was amazing because she took me through a few little subtle variations of the kind of Wim Hof breathing. And we did lots and lots and lots of rounds in it, kind of back to back. And I'd had some really tight muscles. I had a really tight hip flexor before because I hadn't been stretching enough, basically, because I'd been busy. Yeah. And after the breathing, I had super deep relaxation. I was really, really chilled and just felt very good. Felt very clear headed. Felt very, very relaxed, and just felt like I had good energy. And then we jumped into the ice. And the breathing, obviously, you know, when you're fully immersed in 40 kilograms of ice water. Ice in water, you need to really control that shock. And if you look at I've got a little video on Instagram, on my Instagram story, where it's about 2.5 minutes or maybe 3 minutes.
I can see it here. Yeah.
And then like it's worth watching to the end because you learn what you do when you get out of the ice. They Wim Hof and the instructors, they take you through these horse stance exercises. So it's like martial arts horse stance. So you use your glutes and your legs and big muscles to pump blood around the body and warm yourself up because you need to not shiver because the shivering will kick in and then you kind of it's hard to stop.
Yeah. Have you tried cryotherapy?
No, it's kind of on my hit list to go to there's a Champanese place in Tring where they did have a cryotherapy chamber. But do you know what? I think I found this company in Scotland that has these 500 liter oak whiskey barrels, and they're like antique ones, and they're from whiskey, basically. So they're whiskey, you know, kind of distillery process. So they still smell of whiskey. They're beautiful looking things, and I'm going to buy a couple of them. And one's going to be an ice bath, and one's going to be a wood fired hot tub.
I was going to say, you need some heat there, man. You can't just go cold, cold, cold all the time.
I don't like the cold very much, actually. I don't think there are many people who are like, oh yeah, I love getting cold. I think it's a very natural reflex to be like, I don't love it. It doesn't feel great. But then when you practice, it's like all of these things, nutrition, fitness, food, breathing. When you practice, when you tiptoe in, and I'm 44 and I'm still learning to not go hard at things. Like I fell in love with mace training, you know, like steel maces.
I went
way too hard. I hurt my elbow, you know, had to back off. So don't do that. Don't go in progressively, be patient, tiptoe into it. But then when you adapt, you will love it. You'll feel the benefits. And the other thing about the cold, which I didn't mention earlier, is like hormesis. Yeah. You know, it's like that. It's basically when you expose yourself to these stresses that the body doesn't like naturally, then you raise your resilience in all areas, mental, physical, breathing, cold tolerance. And it kind of, you know, this is why I'm so obsessed with human performance, is because I think it makes you better in other areas outside, you know, the gym or the cold bath.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. You speak about human performance because I think that's kind of what you're trying to achieve, isn't it? It's the best human performance you can get out of somebody. And that always interests me when people speak about human performance, because human performance is exactly what you're saying. If you're optimum in your human performance, everything else in life just falls into place, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, you've hit the nail on the head there. That's kind of my life's work on the health and fitness side of things, is I wanted to try and show people that, you know, it's mind, it's body, it's lifestyle, it's everything. The problem is that we have, you know, we have health and fitness over here, and then we have like motivation over here, and then we have business over here, and we have all these different kind of silos that are not connected, which is just a wrong approach. Everything is the same. It's all connected. If you invest in your health and go to the gym and invest in your nutrition and improve your sleep and work on your breathing, it makes you so much better when you're presenting to, you know, kind of pitching for a deal in your business or, you know, just doing whatever you do day to day, leading a team or kind of, you know, it makes you a better person. I think in terms of how you operate, and for me, it's something I'm on a lifelong quest to try and just optimize my performance. There isn't an end goal. There's not like, hey, I've made it. You know, there's this perfect state here. It's just learning. That's the fun of it, and you know, sharing some of that stuff along the way. And that's what Torchbearer is. It's not necessarily me being a torchbearer. It's there are some people out there who really are, like, you know, kind of leading examples, and they really walk their talk, and those are the torchbearers that I basically try and learn from, and I try and implement a lot of this stuff along the way, because I know that if I didn't, I would be a lot, you know, kind of, I'm not some amazing high performer by any stretch, but I know I'd be a lot shitter than I am, basically.
I there's a couple of things to pick up on there. So so for example, if I Monday to Friday I go to work, normally it's an early start. It's an hour and a half minimum drive to work. So my hips are always already tight when I get to work. I do a 9-hour shift and then I drive home. This week, minimum it took me to get home was 1 hour. Maximum was 3 hours. I was in traffic, just sitting there. And so you don't get a lot of time to do a lot more else. But when I do go to the gym after work, which is normally when I do go, I actually use a motivational video from YouTube.
Yeah. Which one?
It's usually David Goggins.
I was going to say, I bet it's David Goggins.
Because David Goggins is...
Come on, you can do it.
Yeah. And no matter how I'm feeling on that particular day, if my little one has kept me up overnight and I've had a full day at work and I've been sitting in traffic for 3 hours, I'll go to the gym and I'll go for it. And I mean, that's good, because what I think is, when I'm on the running machine, I do 30 seconds fast and 20 seconds slow, and kind of try and just keep up my high intensity training. But I always think to myself, at least I'm here, you know, because if I'm not here, I'm either eating shit at home or just sitting on the sofa. So I like to move as much as I can. And I do use like David Goggins, The Rock. The Rock's a good one.
The Rock is awesome. Who doesn't like The Rock?
Yeah, I mean, he's some of his training videos. I mean, yeah, I can't pick up some of the weights he's doing, but you know, you just have a little look on there and you go for it. And that's what I use to motivate myself to go to the gym.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, that's what I have to do. I'm in the process of building a gym downstairs under the... Do you remember my house?
I do. Awesome. That's brilliant.
So the whole floor space of the house underneath is going to be a workshop, and it kind of still is, but I think we're going to adapt it so that it can be used as a training facility for myself.
Tony Stark, like, you want to be like Iron Man, like have like the cool workshop with some exercise, like a hybrid creative space. Because, you know, like, working out is a creative pursuit. It should be a creative pursuit. So I love the idea of that environment, workshop, gym, body workshop.
Awesome. We've just created a new company, you know that?
Tell me what it is.
We can design and install what you're saying to customers. Easy.
I'd be all over that. Yeah. All we need is Jarvis. All we need is that, like, kind of that proper AI that can help us build cool stuff. But yeah, no, definitely. I think, I mean, I've advised a few clients over the years when I was, you know, training and coaching on home gym setups, and you know, you don't need a lot of kit. No. I mean, obviously I don't want to do any actual gyms out of business, but I never go to the gym. I've got my own gym. I'm really lucky to have my own gym. Yeah. It's simple. I've got gymnastic rings, I've got kettlebells, I've got some steel maces. I do have an assault air bike, which is a nasty piece of kit.
What's that?
Assault air bike. It's like a watt bike, you know, like with the handles and the pedals and the big fan wheel.
They're brutal, man. Oh my God. That's on my buy list. That's That's one of the bits of equipment I want to buy downstairs.
Yeah, it's a good investment there. It's a really good tool to do intervals. And it's safe. It's a safe tool. It's hardcore. I've got a squat rack and an Olympic barbell and a cable crossover stake, but that's about it. You don't need a lot of stuff. And, basically with gymnastic rings and a few kettlebells, a few pairs of kettlebells, you can be absolutely sorted. And then if your budget stretches to it, throw in an assault air bike, and you have infinite variation because the body works in patterns of movement, not exercises. So there's so many combinations you can, kind of explore with kettlebells and gymnastic rings for the upper body. They are awesome. They're so humbling. When I've lifted kettlebells weights all of my life, and I've never been like a power lifter, but I'm relatively strong and I'm well qualified. When I first, when I was 38, I first got some gymnastic rings and decided to try and play around on those. Absolutely knocked me on my ass. I was like right back to being a beginner because, it's a completely different challenge, very unstable. You need to learn to use your body in a different way and strengthen your connective tissues. So, that's the beauty of the journey, by the way, is like going back to that beginner's mindset every time you're learning these things. Muscle ups. I got them because I wanted to be able to do muscle ups, which is, you have the gymnastic rings hanging up up here. And basically, you have to use a full grip, which is like a kind of hybrid gymnastic grip. So you have to hold the ring here. It's a weird grip. And then you do a pull up and then you transition into a dip and you do a dip up the top. So I really wanted to do muscle ups. And so I got gymnastic rings and I started training on those. And as I say, like when I first started, despite being well qualified and lifting my whole life, I was like, shit, this is really hard and I'm no good. And it showed up lots of weak links, which I think is the absolute beauty of these different training modalities, is it teaches you something. And I'm like, okay, well, my elbow tendons are not... they're not conditioned enough to do this kind of work. So I need to be patient. And for me, being patient and having to take things slowly is a really, really good thing, because I'm a creative kind of like just leap into stuff and, break stuff person. So things that slow me down are really good. But with a minimal, the point is, with a minimal setup, you can train for life. You can get into amazing shape. You can get amazing, amazing results. A couple of things in what you said, if you don't mind me just going back over them, is that, you work really hard, and I have huge respect for you because you're out there doing really long hours with a crazy commute either side as well to look after your family and to kind of build your dream, your definition of success and your lifestyle. And I absolutely love that. And I have huge respect for you doing that. And I think the fact that you come back and you whack on a David Goggins motivational video and you'll hit the gym hard, I absolutely love that as well. I think, you're the definition of someone who's on the path and you're learning and you're experimenting and you're trying to get the best out of yourself so you can get to where you want to go. And I think that's amazing. However, criticism sandwich, start with a positive, put the negative in the middle. I was just going to say that because we talked about this last time, you have this stress bucket. So if you imagine stress of all different types, exercise stress, emotional stress, financial stress, nutritional stress, chemical stress, whatever, hay fever, things like this, the body doesn't know how to differentiate between different types of stress. It doesn't categorize. It just chucks them all in one bucket.
Okay.
And when you're doing really long hours and you're really, really busy, et cetera, your bucket's quite full. Especially if you're not eating as well as you could because you're so busy, your bucket's quite full.
Yeah.
Exercise is another form of stress. Often a good stress, but sometimes not as good. And it just goes into the same bucket. And when the bucket's quite full, sometimes it can fill it up too much or tip it over. And the reason I mention that is just because if you're exercising, you push yourself. I know you push yourself. You go and attack. The gym, that will be raising your cortisol levels, which will be affecting your sleep. So I'd reckon if you could, I know you probably can't, but if you could shift your workout to the morning, you probably find it makes a big difference on your sleep. Because if you're going and attacking it in the evening, before sleep, it's going to raise your cortisol levels, and you're probably going to find that that interrupts your sleep. And also the other thing is that to get in good shape, you do not have to beast yourself. I do almost no high intensity work, Would you believe it? I've got the Assault air bike. I use it about once a month.
I was going to ask you that.
I used to use it a lot more, but I use it about once a month because really, we've been sold a pack of lies when it comes to health and fitness. And yeah. I want to come back to this bit. This is where I said I'd separate health and fitness.
Yeah.
This is really, really important. But okay, like if you're a Navy SEAL or, you know, in the Marines or like friends of mine who've been through the paras or, you know, other things like that, you have to beast yourself and you get absolutely beasted. Like a friend of mine was a PTI in the paras for 10 years. And yeah. Some of the things he told me about what they used to do to the guys, they used to beast them. They used to absolutely hammer them. And yeah, okay, you know, in those sorts of situations, you need to push hard and you need to be super resilient and tough and know that you can handle extremes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Not everyone needs to be there and operate at that level and train in that way. And I think this is a really important point. And depending on your lifestyle and how much stress you have and all the other circumstances and how healthy your gut bacteria, your gut balance is, you know, how much sleep you get, all of these things, again, you need to individualize your exercise. Exercise is a bit like a prescription based on you and what you need.
Yeah.
So to be honest, you can have a six pack, you can be in amazing shape, you can have great energy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Without smashing yourself. And now I'm older. If you smash yourself too hard, one, you don't recover as quickly.
Yeah.
And two, you can get injured more easily. Mm-hmm. And if I injure myself, it's going to take me out for a couple of months, which is really going to piss me off. So actually I train a bit slower. I'm in fairly good shape for my age, you know, better than most people. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you know, there are a few fallacies out there. And the last thing I quickly on this is that everyone lumps health and fitness together and we really must separate the two because being fit and having a six pack and being one of the plastic people on Instagram who looks amazing does not mean you are healthy. It does not mean you are healthy. And you know, health is completely separate. And it doesn't mean looking a certain way. It doesn't mean conforming to a certain body type. It's about building true health from the inside and then out. So, and what I mean by that is once you work on your gut health, your breathing, your energy levels, your hormone levels, your neurotransmitters, your nutrition, all of this stuff, if you're healthy on the inside, you will look good on the outside. You'll look like yourself. It'll be unique. You won't look like anybody else, but you'll look healthy. And, you know, I think you'll be happy with those results. And so that's what I mean by separating health and fitness. So what we're told in the fitness world is not necessarily good advice for health.
I must admit you touched on recovery. Now I don't recover as quick as I did when I was younger. A lot of that's down to my immune system problem. When we last spoke, I was diagnosed with lupus, but now I'm kind of, I haven't got lupus, but I've got an immune suppression issue going on that they're still investigating again. And every now and again, I'll get a swollen tongue. I'll feel groggy, like I've got a flu coming on, but I don't have the flu. So what's your recovery system? How do you recover?
So, I mean, I have an Oura Ring, which is, I don't know if you know about these things. I don't get paid to promote these. It's like, it's a smart fitness tracker. So it's like a titanium ring, but it's got like, quite a few sensors. I can't take it off. I'm trying to get it off. Anyway, it's got quite a few sensors on the inside. Basically what this does is it monitors quite a few things, mainly overnight. It monitors heart rate variability, respiration rate, skin temperature, heart rate, and also sleep quality. And so I've been using this for quite a while. I like to look at my HRV, my heart rate variability. It's like about the only metric I really pay any attention to because I'm a fan of the low tech approach and just listening to your body, which I think is more important. However, it's quite nice to have some data. So heart rate variability, I look at my heart rate variability score every morning, which this gives me in a very simplified way. It gives me a readiness score. And it's like, it's based on your autonomic nervous system, and kind of maybe there are two branches to your autonomic nervous system, which is like, you know, the sympathetic branch, which is like the accelerator pedal basically. Mm-hmm. And the parasympathetic branch, which is like the brake pedal, rest and repair.
So
basically I look at that, and I also do a chest strap measurement with an app called Elite HRV. It's a free app. You need a good Bluetooth chest strap, and I take an HRV measurement first thing in the morning when I wake up for 2.5 minutes, and then I base my training on those scores. So if I have a high HRV score and it says, you know, you can go and smash yourself, then I go and push harder, and if I don't, I back off actually. And I do like yoga, well, not yoga, but I do mobility, I do lighter stuff, I play around with a mace, I run, I skateboard, I've started skateboarding a lot, which I love. So in terms of recovery, it's eat well, sleep, listen to your body, track your HRV score, and just know when to back off. Like, not every day is a day to go and smash it and push hard. Like, you know, honestly, if you took one of those workouts and did full body mobility, you know, working on your hip flexors, your hamstrings, your lower back, your shoulders, especially as we get older, as we're in our mid-40s and beyond, that stuff pays huge dividends, and you'll move better and you'll feel better. Your energy levels will be better. Your stress levels will reduce. And then when you know you're recovered, you listen to your body, you have a good HRV score, by all means, go and smash yourself to pieces. So cold is another good recovery tool, but just like breath work, breathing. And doing something like probably the most powerful recovery tool is flow. Like getting into flow, the flow state around something you love, like, which is why I've been skateboarding, longboarding. It's just like when you, the flow state is where you're kind of completely absorbed in a task, full concentration, and you know, time disappears, and you know, you kind of all of that stuff, which I'm sure you've read about. And I think that's why, for me, it's not a high performance flow state, it's like a recovery flow state, if that makes sense. Skateboarding, doing something you love.
Definitely. It helps with the brain and the whole enzymes in the brain, and gets them all moving, doesn't it? So I'm gonna finish off with a quick question. I've had a lot of fun talking to you, Ollie, and I could spend the whole day discussing things like this and chatting. Hopefully we can meet up next time and have a
I'd love that. You need to come down here.
Whereabouts are you in the country?
I'm in Hampshire, about an hour south of London.
All right, I'll do that
and I'll stick you in an ice bath. And then I'll put you on the Assault air bike and then stick you in an ice bath.
Sounds good. Always the hard bit first, which is, in my opinion, is the air bike. I mean, I was on the air bike last week, actually. I should have recorded it. I think I did 8 minutes. There's a setting on there that does 8 minutes. So it's 30 seconds. 30 seconds high intensity working. And then it was 20 seconds resting. 8 minutes. Is it hard?
Yeah, that's hardcore. I mean, it's a proper hardcore tool. If people don't know about Assault air bikes, you know, Google one and have a look. But basically, it's infinite resistance. You're the resistance, so the harder you work, the harder it gets. And if you go for an all-out sprint, box you on your ass. It's hard, hardcore. And it accumulates as well, like over the course of 5-6 intervals, it catches you up, and it can really, you have to be a little bit careful when at first.
Yeah, because I think according to the machine, I burnt 100 calories, 100, and I thought
which is less than one chocolate covered digestive biscuit. It's depressing, isn't it, when you think about it in those terms?
Yeah, but I was questioning how accurate that is, because when I do the runs for half 30 minutes, my runs, I burn 300 calories according to the machine.
Yeah, like, I mean, this is an old kind of debate in the kind of exercise industry, and I think this science is probably a little bit outdated. I'm not really clued up actually on the latest research, but I think it probably hasn't changed that much in the fact that, like, steady state stuff, if you go for like a 45 minute run, you probably burn more calories overall during that run versus doing a 20 minute interval session on the Assault air bike where you'd burn fewer calories. However, there was something called EPOC, and this is what I need to update myself on. I'm a bit rusty on this research, so I may have moved on then. But EPOC is like excess post-oxygen consumption, which is basically you burn fewer calories during the interval session, but you've cranked your metabolism up quite a lot. So actually, you get this afterburn effect where your body will be burning excess calories to recover for up to 24 hours. I need to check that. So, you know, but
I need to know. I need to know when to trigger that off. When I don't have the knowledge to say this is when I trigger the epoch, whatever it is, off. So I need to learn that, because I do think that's when I burn more fat.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you need a mixed program. You need to, you know, lift some weights. You need to do some mobility. You need to do some steady state training, and then you need to do some interval training. Not just always interval. You know, interval training is brilliant. It's one of the sort of secrets of longevity. Apparently, there's a lot of research into interval training, and it is very, very beneficial. But you have to be careful with it. Like it's a weapon. You have to be careful with.
Yeah. Okay, Ollie. Well, look, it's been fantastic. Let me ask you this question and let you go. So, what advice would you give to a 13-year-old Ollie about life and motivating him?
About life, in life in general, any area.
In general, any area. What advice would you give yourself to make yourself progress in life later on, like basically?
That's a lovely question. I have a 13-year-old daughter as well, and it's such a good question. Two pieces of advice. One would be just to believe in yourself.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what you do, how you look, or any of the kind of traditional bullshit that people think about, is that just believe in yourself and your own abilities. Whatever you're good at, doesn't matter. Just really believe in yourself. And the second thing is, and I've only just learned this last year, is follow the breadcrumbs. I really like this. Like life, the universe, whatever you want to sort of talk about, whatever floats your boat.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff we don't understand. And I really do believe that certain things happen for a reason. And life will bring you opportunities and open doors and, you know, put you into situations and help you meet people all of the time. Mm. And often we're distracted and close-minded and, you know, stressed, and we miss them. But learn to slow down, pay attention, and follow the breadcrumbs, because actually when you do, you find super cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. All right, well, look, Ollie, it's always a pleasure. I met you it was about 3 years ago, probably 2 years ago, but prior to that, I probably knew of you 6 months prior to that, I think, on Instagram or Facebook, whatever it was. You're a great person. I look up to you and look at your Instagram all the time, and try and take motivation from you as well. Thank you for being on my podcast, Full Throttle with Dervish. Where can the audience find you?
I mean, Dervish, thank you so much for having me. Those really kind words, and it's been a pleasure talking to you again. And I'd love to do it. You'd come down here next time. I mean, I'm not very active on Instagram. I'm trying to get better. At OllieHT is my Instagram handle. I deleted my Facebook account because I really don't like that world. That's about it. I have a company called Rare Partners. We're still building our website now. Mm-hmm. But for health and fitness stuff and kind of my podcast and things, Instagram at OllieHT. Mm-hmm.
And your podcast is The Torchbearer?
My podcast is called Torchbearer with Ollie Herman Taylor, and it's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the usual big platforms.
Okay. All right, Ollie. Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Dervish, thank you so much for having me. Lovely to talk to you.